Hi, welcome to Now and Tomorrow. I'm your host, Nally Morales, and I am here with my dear friend, Kenya Penalba.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be on today. When Nally invited me on, she told me the list of topics, and I was so stoked because it's issues I love to read about, research on. So, yeah, I think we're hearing way too much of one narrative when it comes to these issues, so I'm excited to share my point of view with everyone.
I know, it is really exciting. When I did message you, it was kind of just like, this is something we have in common with, our beliefs kind of the same, and we could, share our thoughts into the world and knowledgeable on these topics. They're a little controversial, but that does not mean that our thoughts are permanent. Thoughts change throughout time. The more that you learn, the more you expand, the more your thoughts change, but it's good to understand that there's different opinions and there's different narratives instead of just following one specific narrative.
Exactly. I love that. I agree with it so much. Everyone is in a different place of their consciousness with these issues, political topics, social issues, and everyone's point of view is shaped by their own experiences. And I think it's important to remember everyone pretty much has the same end goal. They just want the world to be a better place. We all have different thoughts on how to obtain that. But I think we need to break the stigma around contradicting mob mentality. It's just getting crazy these days.
And I'm glad that you brought it up, the mob mentality, because this that we are specifically hitting is definitely going to put us against the mob. And it's okay. We're strong-minded people and we stick by your opinions no matter what you may feel. And I think that's the most important part about my podcast as well. The people that I have on here is because they are strong in what they believe in. They know what they believe in and they want to stand by it. And that's one of the characteristics I see in myself that I love. It's just one of those things where if your mind can easily be changed by what others may think of you and how others may perceive what you're saying, you're going to constantly be looking for constant,
I think I know what you mean, like a sense of like approval from others. I think that's kind of dangerous because when you're put in the situation that you have to substantiate those beliefs that you're getting from the people around you, you're not going to know what to say because these aren't your own views. So what happens and what we're seeing a lot of right now is that when people are put in the position where their views are being challenged, they don't substantiate their views. They just insult the person that they're talking to. And for me, I consider myself a truth seeker to the fullest. And it's really hard to get answers about life when people are fighting all the time.
Especially when people get defensive on topics that they're not even sure that they know what they're talking about.
Exactly. They're not even sure they know what they're talking about. They're just going with the mob again. And two, something you see online all the time, when you question mob mentality, you get these comebacks and responses that you've heard 1,000 times. Everyone's just parroting the same exact thing all the time. So if you get anything...
How would you describe mob mentality to those that aren't aware what that is?
Ooh, I like that question. Mob mentality, what I would equate it to is group thinking, sharing this collective idea with anyone. And when someone has a question or a slightly different view or whatever, everyone goes to gang up on them and attack them. They don't even do it in a respectable way.
Or in a way that they can understand why they're wrong or acknowledge.
Yeah, exactly. It's just disgusting. But I think everyone who has access to a cell phone or a computer has seen a little bit of what that's like, especially, the election just passed, all that.
I feel like a lot of people get stuck thinking that their social life is the reality of things.
Dude, yes. Or whenever someone is a victim of the mob, it takes a hard toll on your mental health really bad.
It does. It definitely does. And I feel like it shouldn't be that way because asking questions is the best way to lead to the perfect answer.
Period. And being wrong. I once heard in a TED Talk, something I love, that being wrong should be celebrated because that was the catalyst for getting new knowledge. I love that.
Most definitely. Even with this podcast, we went through trial and error. And that's another thing that I didn't want to say. This is our first podcast together, and there's a lot of things that we are fixing together and that we are learning and we are moving forward. But then there are a lot of things that we know what we're talking about, And I'm glad that we can be able to talk about this. And a lot of the things, I am going to post a link for the essay. Well, no, I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, she gave you guys a spoiler. What were you talking about?
Sorry.
Yeah, super crazy stuff, an essay. Stay tuned.
No. I didn't even mean to say essay. I meant to say like a research paper. I am posting the link
to
the paper that we are citing. Just because, so you guys know what we're talking about.
Super exciting. Stay tuned.
Have a little background of where we're coming from, not just based off solely off of us. Because we even want you to question us. We want you to be a free thinker to the way, be like, okay, like, are they, what they're saying, is it affecting me? Or, you know, is it wrong? We want to be able to give everyone the experience to ask the big question, which is why. It's something so simple. And I feel like we keep talking about the big why. And the other day we were actually talking about like big philosophers, like Socrates and Plato's, who are so well known for simply asking why, for simply asking for a background to why things work. And that's the most important thing, trial and error and finding out why, where is the root of this? How can I find an answer to this? It's the most important thing in life. I think that's the only way you probably are going to advance and learn more.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny you bring that up, because I told Nowling, I think if Socrates and Aristotle were alive today, they would be the people with podcasts and YouTube channels just putting their ideas out there. And it's like she said, all they did was use a little common sense. They weren't that special. So,
I mean, did you know that? I think it was Plato's or Socrates. They thought that the stars were a big giant blanket over the earth with little holes in it. So it wasn't like...
They were dumb as hell and they were so famous.
even back then it was such a different view, so it was so important, and that's why it's still said to this day, because it was going against what everybody else had said, even if it was as dumb as maybe the stars are a blanket over the earth. And
now that's cute. I like that.
Yeah, it is super cute. And it's little things like that that motivate me to push forward and continue to ask these questions, even if there are maybe there's a dumb answer to it, but I know it. I love knowing it, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I think there's something profoundly beautiful about being able to jump on this public podcast and say, hey, look, me and this girl that I'm talking to, we want to explore these topics. So if you take anything from this podcast, I don't care if you agree with me. I just want to inspire you to, like she said, look into why you believe what you believe and try to substantiate these beliefs and seek truth.
I thought you said the seek truth part, because that is the most important thing. A lot of people do not seek truth. A lot of people kind of just...
Yes, like, dude. It's like people don't even care what the truth is, literally.
I've had conversations with people where I'll have a conversation with them privately, and then we'll go in public and they'll repeat exactly what I said without no background knowledge on what I said. Just kind of going based off what I said. And I'm like, okay, like, I like that you trust my word of mouth, but at the same time, I question everybody.
Yeah, as any sensible person should.
You should question everybody. You should always go back, recheck it. I hate those people like, and I like that. It's funny that we brought the social media up, because I like the fact that social media now does kind of like a fact check. Like, if you post something, they're like, hey, do you want to read the article first?
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I didn't see that you read it. You just kind of reposted it and didn't say anything. Yeah. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people don't. I've seen a lot of people wrongfully quote articles, and then you read the rest of the article, and it's like, no, that's not even what they said. You just quoted
Or
it was. Like, you didn't even read it. You read what? The abstract, the introduction, and
the headline.
It's wrong to do that. It's good that you're trying to stay informed. It's just to what extent is of your truth.
It's wrong to do that, because it makes you easy to manipulate if you just follow headlines. It's something really dangerous. And I think the news knows it happens and they're taking advantage of it. But
those captions where like those headlines that are like so juicy and you're just like, oh my God, is this true? And like people don't really click it. So they don't realize that what they're saying may not be true. A lot of people don't know what the Onion is. And I know.
Oh, it's like a joke news thing.
And I've seen people like on my own timeline that post Onion articles, and I'm like, do you know that this is satire?
Oh my God, that is so funny. I never thought anyone really thought those were real. That's pretty funny.
And there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with being ignorant on these topics. It's just more you have to understand that you're spreading it onto all these people, then
that's when it gets dangerous.
That's exactly. Having a platform where people actually do listen and follow you, and you post wrong things, it's not a good look. It's not a good look.
It's not a good look, period.
So let's kind of jump onto these topics that we wanted to hit. So we actually range from a variety of topics, but we finally decided on one that we specifically liked, one that we specifically felt like needed more attention, just because it goes back to the narrative of I hate men, men suck, men are just like, men should just leave.
Yeah.
And I feel like it goes back to the mental health awareness, like understanding them, like, these things take a toll on men.
It's extremely hypocritical. So one thing I'm huge on is what you speak dictates your reality, and there's science to back it up. If you're constantly complaining about men, you're only strengthening these like neural synapses for complaining to make it a more compulsive behavior. So you make yourself addicted to complaining, and you're hurting your own perception of reality. I refuse to engage in that kind of rhetoric, complaining about you hate men all the time. And of course, it's detrimental to men. Imagine how it makes the men of our society feel to go on social media all the time and the world is ragging on you and telling you what is innate to you is toxic.
Yeah. And if all that, I feel like a lot of men don't realize what good masculinity is.
Right.
So when they get told that masculinity in general is bad, they're not going to know what things to keep from themselves and their personalities and what things that they need to get rid of.
And they'll feminize themselves with good intention to not be threatening to women because they're constantly being told masculinity is bad. And of course, masculine energy or feminine energy doesn't have to be exclusive to a certain sex, but I think that it's causing this conflict with men where their innate characteristics are on the more masculine side, but you know, there's this confusion. They feel like they have to act more feminine, and it creates conflict in interpersonal relationships, or it can at least.
And the lack of masculinity is more dangerous.
Exactly. I actually think that that is what it is when people are calling a certain thing the absence of toxic masculinity, like catcalling, being temperamental. For me, that's not a representation of masculinity. That's the absence of it.
Most definitely.
So that it's not masculinity that's the problem. It's the absence of it.
So where do you draw the line at what can be, let me rephrase myself. How do you think that we can embrace masculinity without overshadowing femininity? There needs to be a good common ground for both. And I think that everyone needs to have a little bit of both in them to be able to succeed and move forward in a world where technically male dominant.
Okay, I think this is a really interesting question. Because I think that it's actually a contrary effect. I think that if we began to embrace true masculinity and, you know, reinforce that kind of like classic idea of what a guy should be or whatever, I think that femininity would flourish. I think that it's hard to be in touch with your feminine self in a world with no masculinity. Masculinity to me means providing a sense of safety, security. And if I don't feel those things, I can't be my best divine feminine self. For example, so I'm a female first responder. I just finished EMT training. And you would think being in this male-dominated field would emasculate me, but it's the complete opposite. When I'm in that environment, I'm my most feminine self because I feel safe. And I'm with guys who I know won't disrespect me, try anything funny, true masculine men. And again, if it doesn't have to be exclusive to sex.
I'm glad that you brought that up because even when I was in the chess team in high school, it was a mostly male dominant. Even till now, it's like most women don't know how to play. And I feel like you're right. Like I was in touch with my best feminine self, but at the same time, I felt like because I am a woman, I need to work harder to achieve the same things that they can with mediocrity. So how can I?
Statement.
No, but I feel like that's a big problem that a lot of women have in these male dominated fields. So I feel most feminine when I am usually around more women, and I don't know where's that correlation?
I think it depends. Like if I'm in the presence of a creepy, weird guy, I'm not gonna be my most feminine self. But again, like with my classmates, I feel like I can be free, happy, good energy, the things I associate with this whole divine femininity, you know, because the men are providing that sense of security. But it reminds me of a post I read that I love. It says, how did it go? She said that if I'm feminine around you, I must feel really safe around you because I spent a lot of time preserving that version of myself. And I feel like that's so valid. When we feel unsafe, you know, we almost get in touch with our masculine and step outside of our femininity, become defensive, aggressive, ready to fight or flight, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, most definitely. And it goes back to like what I had said, and maybe I had worded it wrong the first time, but because I had to be more masculine around this man, I was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was uncomfortable. I was in a state where, you know, like maybe I have to prove myself to these people.
As much as I'm a fan of masculinity and I want, you know, the world to have this more healthy perception of masculinity, I can understand that. Wanting men to be more understanding to the fact that women may have a more compassionate approach. I relate to that again with my field that I work in. Guys,
but it doesn't take away the knowledge that you do know.
Exactly. So with the field I work in, again, it's very masculine kind of thing. Like you have to think fast, be very decisive. You have to be able to detach from your feelings. That's what I struggle with.
Male characteristics though? Like male roles?
I would say those are things that I would associate with traditional masculinity. Structure, being stoic, being able to detach from emotions, being decisive. For me, I'm extremely indecisive. Yeah. It makes me think of like those memes about how girls never know where they want to eat.
Yeah.
I don't support stereotypes, but it's just funny when you think of the biology behind it.
Yeah.
And I do think we tend to, I mean, as a society, there's a lot of rhetoric that gender is all a construct, but I would have to highly disagree with that.
And I think what they mean by a construct is kind of in a way because it bounds people to these specific things. I don't think that necessarily gender roles are bad. I just think that it's bad when it comes to like, no, because you are born with female genitalia, you need to act this way. Because you're born with male genitalia, you need to act this way. I think it's more like everybody needs to have a little bit of both. And I think that specific gender roles should be applied in certain relationships. Not necessarily bound to the biology of it, but more because it's understanding that a little bit of both is good. Like it's a perfect balance to what the person needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, if masculinity was as evil as everybody said it was, then I promise you, we would be a one-sex species that would reproduce on its own, but we're not because it serves a purpose. It reminds me of something my friend said the other day that I actually loved, that when we think of human evolution, we tend to think of the newer adaptations to the brain, when really we should be focusing on the older ones because they're what got our species this far. And it's like Nowling said, you don't have to be, you know, restricted to that or the traditional ideas of what is a man or what is a woman, but having those roles in a relationship helps make the relationship stronger. It helps you thrive. It helps our species thrive. Relationships are great.
Yeah, most definitely.
Having those roles is fine. You don't have to, I feel like there's this resistance, you know, because of the tension there's always been between the sexes. There's this resistance to the idea of gender roles in a relationship. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine to like to cook for your boyfriend, or if the guy wants to cook for you, like the roles don't have to be exclusive to sex, but it's okay to have roles in a relationship.
Yes. And I think a lot of people like that. I think a lot of people, and I feel like, and this was actually something that we had talked about where I feel like it personally, even though I am, I have a lot of male dominant traits where like I kind of, it's just kind
me
of
too.
Who I am. I was raised in a household where my mother is sole caretaker, my mother pays the bills, and my dad was more like he cooked, he cleans. And so I was raised more to be more independent and have these male characteristics. But I definitely feel like with my boyfriend, I am more on the feminine side. Like you said, like I am comfortable with his masculinity and he doesn't make me feel like I have to constantly prove myself to him, so I can be my most vulnerable self and I can be my most feminine, like in touch with my femininity.
And
I feel like a lot of it also, I like cooking. I like cooking, and I don't like when the narrative is like it's on the, oh, like if you cook for your husband or if you cook for your boyfriend, like, oh, like why doesn't he cook? And it's just kind of one of those things. It's just like, no, like I know my strong suits and I know his strong suits. My boyfriend happens to be really good at cleaning. I happen to be really good at cooking. I'm not going to put these boundaries because of gender roles on what you're supposed to do.
And it's so funny you say that because it's something I've been thinking about so much lately. Thanksgiving just passed and I saw so many posts online like, ladies, are you going to fix a dish for your boo on Thanksgiving? And the replies were like, he has arms, why can't he do it? Da 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 da. But then when women talk about the kind of guy they want a guy who covers the tab, engages in these gender roles. So I do think one big hypocrisy in modern feminist narratives or whatever ideology is that we only want gender roles when they benefit us. And I think it's okay to have gender roles in your relationship.
I really do feel like women only want shit that benefits them. I apologize.
Period.
But it's true, like, women kind of, they want to keep the same narrative where they don't want to work, where they want money to be given to them, but they don't want to offer anything in return.
Or they get offended when a guy says that he wants a girl who's nurturing, who likes to cook, who would be a good mom. It doesn't really make any sense to me.
And it's good to be independent and it's good to not need, like, it doesn't go back to you needing men. It's just understanding.
Of course not.
A lot of women, I feel confused at, and like they get defensive when they're told like, no, like it's okay for you to, in a way, rely on your boyfriends, not necessarily completely on bills and have them clean and have them do all your things, but it's good to be able to rely on this person. And not just because they're your significant other, but it's good to rely on your friends as well.
Interpersonal relationships are meant to benefit us, to help us thrive, you know? So again, it's a little bit absurd that there's resistance to those ideas.
Going back to the memes on Twitter and stuff, where just kind of like, it was the picture of Sweetie like laying back and she's like, me waiting for my boyfriend to bring me my food. And for Thanksgiving, my boyfriend did make me my food. And it's good, but I make him his food all the time.
Exactly. So I think
it goes based on literally, it's a perfect equilibrium. There needs to be a perfect balance of both.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, and you had said earlier that women want men to provide for them and to do all these things for them, but they don't want to give anything in return when men are asking.
Exactly.
Like, hey, maybe they were raised on their mom being the sole caretaker and cleans and cooks, and it's something that they're kind of used to. And I feel like when they're like, okay, like these are my standards, women are like, no, why are these your standards? Like, why do I have to clean and cook for you to make you happy? And I like a lot of women kind of solely rely on their looks and their sexual intendo to kind of keep the relationship going.
Absolutely. It's something I see all the time.
There's way more to it. Imagine if we only relied on men. Imagine if men did nothing for us and simply gave us sexual pleasure. Like, it's not satisfying for anybody.
Yeah.
So why should it be satisfying for them?
Yeah, man, I think it's one huge thing we're seeing in our society, like just in general, this hypersexuality all the time. It's just, I feel like there's this, like, mostly from women. Again, I don't want to come off like I'm attacking women because it's coming from a place of care. I am a woman. I'm speaking on these issues because
don't feel apologetic. Don't feel apologetic. What you're saying is true. It's literally based on psychological facts. Like hypersexuality is the root of early childhood trauma. Like, it's just is what it is. There are women and there are small cases where they're just sexual because they happen to love it and they happen to enjoy sex, but a lot of the times what we're looking at is hypersexuality is the link from trauma. And it's understanding, okay, I put myself in the perspective of sex workers. Am I doing this because I like the gratification from men, or am I doing this because I need quick money? Like, there's different point of views, but it's just, it's looking at yourself and having self-awareness and saying, hey, am I hypersexual because of past?
Yeah, the essay that we talked about earlier, it talks about that a lot, that an absent father figure has a lot to do with how a female eventually expresses her sexuality as an adult. Also too, like Nalin said, it's a symptom of so many personality disorders. Like I think borderline personality, bipolar disorder, depression. And it makes sense. Sex is a baseline pleasure. So when people are seeking this instant gratification, happiness, feeling of worth, feeling of validation, that tends to be the first thing they go to. But in the end, you end up feeling more empty.
Well, definitely, because it's like, and it's literally all goes back down to the brain balance. So when right. you have sex, you do release certain, you release dopamine, you release serotonin, you release all little like
happy hormones.
Happy hormones, exactly, yeah. that make you feel good. So imagine you relying solely based your life on sex and the effects that sex does. When you come down, it's just kind of like, oh my god, like this all sucks. And I feel right. like I see that a lot in my friends, where they yes. look to have sex to make themselves feel better, and then the next day they feel horrible about themselves because they're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that, I didn't really like him, like all these things that come into play when having sex with someone. And I'm all for people doing what they want. I'm all for supporting women and what they're doing. It's just kind of more in a way, like, are you realizing that these encounters are affecting you emotionally?
Right.
And not everything needs to be kind of like a cling. No one's saying that because you have sex with this person, you're going to get stuck with them. Like you're going to grow emotions. No, it's just kind of like what it does to you after this happens. Right. Are you going to feel insecure about yourself after this encounter? Are you doing this with someone that you have, like, things happen. I've met people that have, it's funny that I bring this up, but like I've met people that have sex for the first time with somebody and end up having a baby, and now they're in this
contraceptive too. It's extremely common.
It's kind of where they had a baby and now they don't believe in abortions and things like that.
Right.
So now they're stuck with this person that they met one time, and now they're like, they're raising a whole life. And it's just yeah. like, hello, like that's a little too far. And right. I think women lack that, and men too, because men have sex with women that they have no idea what their background is,
right.
what they might have going on.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
It goes both ways, definitely. But it's like, what is it in, like, what is the root of that? Why do you continuously want to have meaningless sex?
Right. So hookup culture is something I'm extremely against. Again, it's like you said, I support people doing what they want with their body, but I feel like it mostly hurts women. So again, it's like you mentioned earlier, how it's funny how it all comes back to the brain, hormones, and all of that. So the neurochemistry between a man and a woman after sex is completely different. Females release levels of dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin, the attachment hormone. Men, they get a little bit of serotonin, a lot of dopamine, and something called vasopressin. And to my understanding, the way it works is they only build that attachment after a long relations with a woman. Testosterone suppresses oxytocin, so they don't get as much of that bonding hormone. So again, our society is teaching women that this is meant to be empowering to you, liberate you, but it can make you even more enslaved by sex, because you're doing it thinking, woohoo, empowering, but in the end, you're going to be miserable and attached to someone. And a common dynamic you see is girls sleeping with a guy that they actually really like, but he doesn't want anything serious. So you end up kind of taking whatever breadcrumbs you can get from the person.
And that's funny. I feel like our generation created this, like, can sustain this word, like, situationship.
Yeah, situationship. Oh, there's a lot of that.
There's so many situationships, and it's just like people don't understand that it's kind of becoming a problem.
Yeah, and a lot, it affects the woman mostly. I mean, I'm not a man. I can't really speak on how it affects the male psyche, but I mean, men seem pretty indifferent. And I don't think it's construct. I think biologically it makes sense, but we shouldn't allow that.
Really different topic, but it just came to my mind. What do you think do you think males should have a legal right to decide in abortion cases? Like, let's say that it's a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband wants to keep the baby, the mom doesn't. What do you think about that? In my opinion, I personally believe that the woman still has like a say, like a bigger say in it than the man does. But I also think that the male should have some kind of say in this. Like,
that's not tricky.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I apologize. It just came to my mind.
No, I like it. I like it. It's a pretty thought-provoking question. I mean, naturally, I kind of want to say yes. You know, having a baby is a team effort. It's so easy for a woman to say, well, it's my body. But what if the man were to say, well, it's my wallet? What if I'm not equipped to have a baby right now? But
and I feel like that goes back to, like, women, like, she can sustain the baby, but it just reinforces.
It's hard to do it alone.
It reinforces the fatherless figure homes. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it really doesn't.
Right.
Like, you're continuing a cycle, and you raise your baby kind of with a little hate towards men. Like, let's say that you do have a child, and
dude, you're absolutely.
Like, oh, your father left us. So you're, like, the kid is constantly thinking.
Carrying around resentment.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that continuous cycle of hating men, having this unhealthy relationship with sexuality.
To avoid being that person is good, but it's just, to what point are you kind of only putting the blame on the man when he kind of told you, hey, you know, I'm not ready for this baby.
I absolutely agree. And again, that's why for me, I know hookup culture isn't for me. And I think this hyper promiscuity that we're seeing in our society is really detrimental.
I'm a very like, not attached person, but I am a very, I'm very selective. I'm going to say it how it is.
Right.
I'm very selective with who I let around in my area, my space, my bubble. So having these sort of standards to who I can, have sex with, to me, it's
right.
One of those things where I just can't have sex with anybody. Like,
right.
The thought in my mind to where I can go hook up with this person and wake up the next day like nothing happens would drive me simply insane. Like, even if I use a condom, I think that I'm the type of person to be like, oh my God, I have to go get checked. I don't know this person's background.
Absolutely. That's completely sane. And yeah. More people think that way.
And I think that, oh my God, like, I think that a lot of people say that they get checked, but they don't really get checked. And they,
I feel like it too. I don't think that the amount of people that are saying they do it actually do it.
Yeah. As a person that goes get checked, that line is a little long. So like, I understand there are people who are kind of like hesitant to go do it. But if you are going to be a person that does participate in the hookup culture, it's very important to stay safe.
Yes. I think there's, I'm sorry to speak over
no,
you.
No, you're good.
I think there's a negative stigma around talk about only having one partner, but I mean, I would want it from a man as well. Someone that is exclusive with their energy. I think scarcity is an aphrodisiac. That's undeniable. Someone who doesn't give their attention to everybody.
Definitely.
And for me, for myself, the thought of
dude, oh my God, when I was younger, and then this is where my thought for inclusivity grew, where I was like, I don't want to be with someone that's with everyone. I remember going to a party when I was in high school, and I was talking to this guy, and dude, like, when we walked in the room, it was like five girls staring at me, and I'm like, what's going on? Like, you know, like, I pulled him aside, I'm like, why are these girls like me hugging me? And he's like, oh, because I've been with all of them. And I'm like, okay, like, I might never talk to you again. And it's not to diss him for being, you know, like, promiscuous and having sex with
people.
It's just my preference isn't that.
Right. I mean, I don't think the stigma around it is that evil. Again, you can root it into biology, the spread of diseases.
A lot of people, and it goes back to the mob culture, a lot of people think that because you don't want to have sex with everyone, you're kind of being like a pick me.
Because I hate that word so much.
Oh my God, I fucking hate that word. And I think it comes from the fact that women think that sex is solely for men in a way, because like you said, we are the gatekeepers of sex. Mm-hmm. And if we decide who we let in and who we let out, like, we are choosing that for ourselves.
Right. The idea that to combat that is to engage in a bunch of casual sex ourselves, I feel like it is so absurd, because you're perpetuating this cycle that we don't want. Like, guys objectifying us,
yeah.
Guys being freaking deadbeat losers who don't meet our standards.
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't make any sense. And also, the idea of casual sex doesn't make any sense, because sex is the least casual thing I could think of.
It goes back to, like, you're vulnerable, and there are some people that
you're naked, that's scary.
You're literally naked, you're literally naked. You are your most raw self
need to be comfortable to get it on, to get it cracking.
And oh my God, I've actually, even myself, where I did try to encounter in casual sex, I couldn't. And not because I'm insecure with myself. It was just more because I wasn't comfortable with this person. I wasn't comfortable sharing my energy with you. I wasn't comfortable being my uttermost self. And I feel like the best sex comes from being your uttermost self, being confident within yourself. And a lot of people end up regretting having sex with these random people because it wasn't even good. I've heard that the term, it was a waste of a body count, so many times.
But it's
true because what did you expect from having sex with someone you don't know? What do you expect from that? You're not going to be comfortable no matter how beautiful you are. It's one of those things where you're in your most vulnerable state. You are sharing your most vulnerable intimate self with someone.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you said that earlier, that it didn't feel good at all, because I do think there's this stigma, again, to each their own, but there has become a stigma of when you say that you don't really like to engage in casual sex or act super hypersexual, that you're just not sexually liberated enough. And not to divulge too much about my personal life, but I had this experience where I was telling one of my friends, and she's a great girl, don't get me wrong, but we're extremely different when it comes to this. I was telling her, I like this dude, right? And she was like, oh, you should tell him you want to have sex with him. And I told her that was a horrible idea, because it is. And she told me I need to loosen up and get more comfortable with sexuality. I think that's ridiculous and horribly toxic to tell other girls. And I'm seeing more and more of it.
It is extremely toxic. I feel like women have confused empowering and insecurities, like, in a way. Because
extremely. And
I think you're being more of a pick-me if you're like, oh, perfect. You know, I think you're being more of a pick me because what is your based on that? Oh, you think, because men only want sex, so I'm going to give you what you want. You get me? And it's not like that. It's, you're technically just feeding into more of the toxic masculinity and how they view us and how they continuously sexualize us rather than going against it. I feel like by holding off, you are going against it. You are going against their need to just solely use you for sex.
Right, exactly. We're basically handing ourselves over to them on a silver platter.
It's not that that's the only thing that you offer, because there is, I feel like a lot of women would counter that with, oh no, I offer more than just sex. So
I heard that too.
But I feel like it's one of those things where it's just like, yes, like, you do offer more than sex, but this is just such a big part of your life. Like, whether we wanted to or not, sex is a really big part of everyone's life.
And it's funny too, because earlier we talked about masculinity, and I do think something that is innate with masculinity is wanting that challenge. And I do think it's a bit off-putting when someone is so willing to give their body to you when you haven't done much for them. Maybe it's not exclusive to sex, but I do think it's big on men. Like, the high masculine men I know, they don't want easy sex. They want a challenge. They want to be with a girl with intellect. Yeah. I think the guys who are prone to take advantage of this whole, like, casual sex culture and female liberation are guys that aren't that impressive. They're just kind of, again, bottom of the barrel, and they're enabling this toxic culture. It's not attractive, but, you know, we're seeing less and less good quality masculine men because of the attitude our culture has towards sex. And again, too, with OnlyFans culture, do what you want to do, but if guys don't have to develop the personality traits, how can I say this? If they can't cultivate those interpersonal skills that would actually make a woman want to interact with them, we're going to see a decline of quality men. It's something we're already seeing.
Yeah. And it's definitely something unattractive. To me, like, if the first message that I receive, well, I'm in a relationship, but if I wasn't, if the first message that I receive would be like, oh, like, specifically targeting something sexual, like, oh, like, your boobs or this, like, to me, that's such a off-putting. It's gross. It's gross. Like, yeah. And I don't post these pictures so you could sexualize me. I post these pictures because I look good. And for you to come into my messages, like targeting that, it's off-putting. Like, I'm not.
Dude, I love that you mentioned about as far as, like, what you post online. Because what I've noticed is when I post a picture in a bikini, I get, like, 300 likes. Yeah. But if I post a genuine thought from my heart and soul, it'll get like 20 likes. And I feel like it allows this like fakeness in my life to fester, like all this fake energy, like all this sudden attention from boys, girls, everyone. It just, I want nothing to do with it. I mean, there are going to be those times where I'm feeling myself and I want to post a cute picture, but I've learned that watching how I behave online has done a good job at weeding out the kind of men in my life, and even women too.
I was literally going to say that a lot of women that that are present in casual sex, they do participate in casual sex, a lot of them are like, oh my god, like, why did I end up with this shitty man? Or why did I, when yes. It's really just a mirror of what you think that you deserve.
Exactly.
You seek in others what you think that you deserve, the kind of love that you deserve.
Exactly. So
a lot of
you teach people how to treat you. That's a saying that I love and I think about all the time.
That is, it is very true. If you are this person, like you said, and I don't want to use the word easy, but kind of easily
low standards,
easily accessible.
Yeah.
You give everyone that perception where it's easy to get to you. It's easy to be with you. And
manipulate you, use you for their own personal gain. And it's something we hit on earlier too. To hit on something we talked about earlier, this I hate men rhetoric. I think that's detrimental with what you attract because, you know, if you want this kind of guy that you feel like, oh, you know, doesn't exist anymore, is a rare breed, do you think that he's on social media calling girls sluts or saying, oh, I hate women? No. I think we need to be more conscious of our language if we want to attract better guys.
Most definitely. And I also think that, and this is a little controversial, but I also think that social media isn't everything. So who you, like, maybe I've noticed a lot of people have like a different identity on social media.
Yes.
A lot of people use promiscuity to attract more followers specifically for that nature,
to build a platform. It's something we're seeing more and more lately, and with really young girls feel like if they want to excel in something or get noticed that they have to take their clothes off. And it's really sad because what happens is, I'm so sorry I actually cut you off, but it was just the point and it just ignited so much passion in me. The problem with that is that you build this platform based off of your body, but the second that you want to stray away from that, no one cares what you have to say. And with my own friends, because as much as I'm against, for myself, sex work, I do have friends that are participating in that. And they'll
have
breaks from social media and they'll tell me, yeah, I feel like people only want to see me naked. And that's extremely sad. And again, we're just perpetuating this culture that we don't want it to exist.
And I feel like it messes up with your head because it's just kind of like, oh, like, am I only appreciated when I am naked?
Exactly.
So you kind of fall into these where you kind of only post things where you're naked.
Yes.
In order to receive the attention that you originally got.
Yes. And it falls back into that thing that these actions that are meant to empower you are actually enslaving you even more.
Yes. Oh my God. That was worded so good, Kenya. Like, that was... It's literally the truth. Like, a lot of women don't consider it that way, but it's literally the truth. Like, you're enslaving yourself to what kind of they want you to be rather than what you think that you should be.
Exactly. And another thing that I feel is, I think if you have a genuine, healthy relationship with sexuality, like, our generation preaches about so much, you don't talk about it all the time. But sex is inescapable. It's in the music, media, movies. There was a book I read in the summer. The book never talks about sex at all. It's a really wholesome book with a great plot. There was a modern adaptation made of it, and there's people making out and having sex every freaking 20 seconds. It's driving me crazy. Something you said the other day that was so funny. You were like, oh man, Kenya, I get you. I had to unfollow this girl because, like, she's always posting her butt and it's a little too much for me.
Yeah.
After a while, it becomes draining.
Yes. And I think that, oh my God, I'm so glad that you brought that up because I know specifically who you're talking about. And I had to unfollow her because it wasn't just her butt. Like, it was constantly, like, her vagina and her, you know, like these little teasers in a way to get you to buy her.
Right.
But it's come to the point where, like, I originally followed you because I liked the thoughts that you posted. And, like,
that's so sad.
Yeah, like, the OnlyFans kind of became your identity.
It's, like, selling out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. You're, I, in my opinion, I think you're cutting yourself short simply doing
absolutely that. Absolutely.
And to me, it's like, if you want to do OnlyFans, definitely do it, but don't let it be your sole personality. Don't let it, like, completely, absolutely, like, don't let it take away all the other good contributions that you have.
Right.
Just make it solely about sex. And I think that I'm very happy that in the generation that we were raised in, we kind of debunked sex as a taboo. Like, we took that out.
I agree. I like, yeah, I agree completely.
But it's just, where is the medium ground? We already notice what it's like. Women are oppressed. So now we are noticing what women feel like when they are empowered. But where these were both kind of wrong.
Extreme.
So exactly, they're extreme. Like, there is no gray area. So where is a gray area where you can feel empowered with your body and you can decide who to have sex with, but at the same time be constrictive and be and be selective.
Right. I agree completely. Something I'm huge on is breaking the taboo nature around talking about female sexuality. And to break this idea that being vocal about sexuality is an invitation for men to come call you, like, disgusting things.
That is exactly. And that's something that I'm very glad that you pointed that out, because it is true. I feel like a lot of women, they might say something that's not too necessarily sexual. I remember when I was growing up, I was surrounded by a lot of male friends, and they would tell me that they would masturbate. And then when I told them that I masturbated, they were like, that girls masturbate. And it's just like, yes, like, we also have these sexual needs and sexual intentos that aren't like strictly made for you to be like, oh, like, do you want me to help you masturbate? Like, no, like, we don't want that.
Right.
That you said that you masturbate, we masturbate too. Like, it doesn't all necessarily have to be in a way where it's coming off promiscuous or like, I want you to be with me.
Right,
like,
right.
No, the same way that it's naturalized for you to be like, yeah, like, hey, I masturbate and it's normal. Men masturbate, like, women do masturbate too. And it's something that shouldn't be thought on too long.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, it's like you said, humanity has this tendency to fight extremity with extremity. And my heart longs for a society where
we can people, balance ourselves
when it comes to health, emotional health, talking about sexuality, you know, there's no taboo nature around that. But again, what we're seeing a lot of is people, mostly women, making sex the forefront of who they are. And I do think it's coming from something deeper inside.
Like, why do you constantly need this gratification from men? Why do you constantly need, why do you seek the approval of these men? Like,
and it's affecting younger generations.
Oh my God, that reminds me of the video that we saw.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, there was this video going around online of this mom publicly shaming her daughter because she found out the girl was selling photos of her body. And I don't agree with how the mom handled it. Humiliation, I think, is a disgusting way to teach a lesson.
I'll put it in here for you guys to see. But basically, like what Kenya was saying, like, she was, in a way, just degrading her daughter. Like,
yeah,
to teach her a lesson. It was disgusting. And I feel like a lot of people are like, no, don't spank your kids, but they've resulted into this public embarrassment.
Yes.
That's like, this is worse than spanking.
No, that's so detrimental. And it's going to make your kid resent you. Horrible approach. And the comments on it were interesting because people were saying that, man, even the mom is influenced by this hypersexual culture. Because in the video, she's saying, oh, you don't even have an ass, da 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 da.
Yeah.
That should be the least of your priorities when your daughter is selling naked photos of her body. And I do think a huge influence is, again, the media's hypersexual nature. It's inescapable. It's in the music, the media, a glorification of it. And as much as I think we need to break the taboo nature around it, some of the stuff that's in the music industry is kind of crazy right now, glorifying sex work and all this. And again, do what you want with your body, but to convince young girls that this is something glamorous is extremely disgusting to me.
It is. And we talked about the other day, like, it was Cardi B that won Woman of the Year, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this, me personally, I love Cardi, but I do not think that is the image that
representation of what the best women have to offer. It's insulting. It's belittling. But again, we're being told that that's empowerment. And I don't think that's empowering. I don't think feeling like the only way I can be a successful woman is by sharing my body. I don't find that empowering at all. I actually find that extremely oppressive.
It really is. And it just goes back into the narrative that men only see as for our bodies and for what we look like. It doesn't go back to like saying, oh, like, no, there's more to her, you know, that there's exactly more for her to offer. And I personally would want to see, I don't know, like, show me a powerful woman up there. Like, I'll read it. Like,
yeah, an intellectual woman.
Yeah, show me. I know, I mean, to this day, like, there is still like this wage gap between women CEOs and men CEOs. Like, why is that not talked about? There's not enough women CEOs, but there's like a million men CEOs and they get paid more. So like let's empower that. Let's focus on that instead of trying to normalize, not even wrong word, not trying to normalize, but trying to empower solely sex work. Because it really is all I've been saying. Right. You're right. It really is.
I can agree with you on that. And I do think that's another flaw with the feminist movement, if you will. I think it loses credibility when you focus on issues like that instead of real issues.
Like tackling the, like the
big, yes. Yeah. I mean, I've heard a lot of contradictory information on wage gap. I have no idea what to believe. But again, it just reinforces the point. This is what we should be focusing on.
It is. It really should be. It would teach other young women that it is capable for them to become these big CEOs, mm-hmm. even if it is in a male dominant. I would personally prefer to see my daughter looking at, you know, like, oh my God, this, like, I look up to Elon Musk and I hear so much of Elon Musk, and I'm like, why isn't there a woman Elon Musk?
A female Elon. Exactly. Yes, I love that.
Like, why isn't there someone, I constantly watch Elon's videos and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's so smart. But at the end of the day, I wish there was a woman there.
And yes, absolutely.
And I feel like that's why I did come up with the idea to create a podcast, because it was kind of one of those things where it's like, yes, I realized that I'm pretty, but I already went through that phase where I use my looks to empower. Now I'm like, okay, right. What can I do beyond the surface?
Right, exactly. I love it.
I would love to see more. I would love to personally see like Woman of the Year to be, you know, someone that is an inventor, someone that is a creator, someone that that helps others rather than, yes. you know, rather than sex work. And not that there's anything wrong with sex work, because, you know, it is one of the oldest professions, like BC times. But it's one of those things where it's just like, let's not shame them, but let's not praise them.
Yeah, and let's properly educate people, because, you know, feminism kind of says they're in support of freedom of choice, but I think true freedom of choice is informing people on the implications of both sides. I see so much glorification of sex work, but not enough talk about the dangers of it.
People take things differently, but I do want to kind of ask this question, because I had it in the back of my head this whole time. Mm-hmm. How can you compare... Where do you draw the line between online sex work and straightforward prostitution? And mm-hmm. like, where do you draw the line? Because they both kind of have this thing where it's in exchange for money.
Yeah, the product of sexual activity. I mean, you can call it prostitution, or even if you don't perceive it as prostitution, I think it's a huge gateway, especially with younger girls getting into it. I think sometimes there is a situation where you're not making as much money as you were promised you would, or you expected to. So
you go deeper and deeper.
You go deeper and deeper. And that's I think it's a huge gateway to it.
And that's a truth that multiple people know, that a lot of strippers don't just stop at stripping.
Like, oh no. I know girls who work in that profession, and they tell me the club is infested with that stuff. And it's funny, because you'd think it's just exploitation from men, but there's even girls exploiting other women. I don't want to divulge too much, because like Nowling said, we're going to make another episode on the realities and dangers of sex work, because again, we just feel like the modern media is glorifying it to the point where it's extremely dangerous. Girls aren't getting the right information, if you will, about it.
Yeah, and they just keep hearing it's good, it's good, it's good.
Yeah, you're going to make so much money. Da, da, da. I'm always seeing girls post how much they made on OnlyFans.
And don't get me wrong, it's so tempting. Oh my God. I saw some girl made like $32,000 in like a month.
I've seen insane.
I'm like, it's so tempting. But then I'm like, wait, I know myself. So I'm like, wait, I think that this would take an emotional toll on me because, right. I don't know, to me, having that many men that I don't like find sexually attractive, having like that many men like kind of consistently tell me that, oh, like what I want to do to you, like to me, that's kind of like, it's gross. Like, I'm just like,
yeah. And on an energetic level, that's draining, giving your attention to all these gross guys, pretending you like them for money. And, you know, one common thing I hear all the time is, oh, well, any job exploits you, any job exploits your body. But I do think sex work takes it to a different level.
It, most definitely, because it's not just at work. Now you kind of brought your work home.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah.
Like, you brought your work home. Like, now you're working from home, and now these pictures kind of define. And I do want to state this. Like, I personally don't think that it is prostitution, but I asked Kenya to see her point of view. I think that there is a difference between looking at a picture and actually touching what's in the picture. So there is a difference, but it goes, is this a gateway to mm-hmm. doing more? Is this going to lead you, you know, like there, you have men of high power with money that are going to be like, hey, like I paid $50 for your nude. What would you do for $1,000 in person? And then you start kind of questioning yourself because now you're like, okay, like this is money that I don't have to report on taxes. This is money, like it's good money. And for people that don't have money, it's like, you know, whatever, like, let me do it. But it's
right.
How are you going to tell someone later on that you had sex for money? How are you going to share this and not in a way feel ashamed of yourself? And I feel like everyone just in a way they shame themselves for things like that, whether right. they thought that they were doing was good or bad. It's just kind of one of those things where you look back and you're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that for easy money.
I do think it could be psychologically detrimental. And you said a very interesting thing earlier about how there's this power dynamic. So again, we're being led to believe that this is a form of empowerment, but it reminds me of a quote that I love that I heard the other day. It goes something like, there's nothing more threatening to a man than an untamable female sexuality. I think it's liberating to be provocative, if you will, or whatever, on my own terms, not for money. I do think they're a part of the erotic element to it for men too, is this like power play where you can make a girl do stuff she wouldn't do for you with your money. You know what I'm saying?
And it feeds into the toxic masculinity. Cause you think that because you have money, you can buy anything.
Yes. Again, so something that's meant to be like ending the patriarchy is kind of perpetuating it,
and it's continuing into the cycle.
Yeah, repetitive cycles of like absent father homes, unhappy people feeling empty inside because we're treating sex like a commodity. I do think the right way is to be selective with your energy and treat your body like it's sacred and have high standards. One thing I see all the time too is girls think having high standards means you have to be this bitter, resentful, bad bitch persona, when there's a way to, how can I say, communicate your standards in a lighthearted way. You don't have to be this hard.
Like, person. I want this, and this, and if you don't give me this, I'm not going to be with you.
Exactly. Yeah. I do think that it's a balancing act of having standards and knowing how to put your ego aside. I think, sorry if this is controversial, I have a little bit of beef with feminism. I think modern feminism teaches women to live in this arrogant place of like high ego, princess complex, the world has to coddle me mentality. And I do think love and big egos don't mix. You can have high standards and you can be lighthearted, graceful, have a nice attitude, communicate.
Like, that's more in touch with your femininity than
that's more in touch with your femininity. It's like living in psychological bondage, being angry at the world all the time, being angry at men all the time, and you're vibrating at a low frequency. You're not going to attract that divine masculine lover. It's like you said, you should be able to sustain yourself and, you know, make yourself happy. It reminds me of this thing, you know, that thing people say, like, don't come into your relationship with your glass empty. Like, hey, fill my glass.
Yeah.
Be able to fill your own freaking glass, lady, before you get into a relationship, or men.
Table. Yeah.
It's like, what do you bring to the table?
And And I feel like only certain people that bring things to the table think like that, though. Because people that, like you say, have nothing to offer don't mind being in a relationship with another person that has nothing to offer. So they're constantly, like, trying to better themselves. I'm glad you had that face you made. But, like, if they're constantly trying to better themselves, but you need to be selfish and be like, no, like, I need to fill my glass up a little bit before I can start sharing with you.
Absolutely, yeah. In order to be selfless, we must first be selfish. Oh my God, I love this book. It's called Love, Freedom, and Aloneness by the philosopher Osho. I don't agree with it. It, like, promotes polyamory, but there's some really insightful stuff to it. And it has this whole chapter dedicated to the virtue and selfishness, and I love it. I think it's so amazing and brilliant.
People make this mistake where they're in a relationship and they constantly give without receiving anything in return. And that leads to being in a situationship where you think that this person is as in love with you as you are, but it's you giving. And if someone's giving me everything with nothing in return, I'm not going to turn that down. Like, you know what I'm saying? Not a lot of people, it takes a gracious and not even gracious, but it takes a person that isn't selfish to be like, okay, you know what? I don't even really like you like that, so I'm just gonna distance myself. But most of the cases are, a lot of people our age are like, no, like, you're giving so much to offer. Why would I turn this down when I can also be with other people?
Yes, dude, people are gonna take as much from you as they can. And it falls back into this idea that you teach people how to treat you. It's love, relationships is like this balancing act of, you know, knowing when to put your ego aside, but also, you know, having standards, healthy standards.
Healthy standards, yeah. Of narrative that women need money, like, from men. Like, that is the only...
Dude, it's driving me crazy. Yeah. Like, man, I'm so for, you know, traditional masculinity and the provider, the caretaker, blah, blah, blah. But, oh my God, our culture has turned it into something so ugly. It's like, we don't want gender roles, but we want, like, these weird, simpy guys who just give us money for living. What happened?
We want the benefits from the gender roles.
We want the benefits from the gender roles. You know, we want it when it's convenient for us. And it's just ruining the quality of men everywhere. I think it's so sad that men think that to get a woman's attention, they need to spend money, buy her things, da da da. And it falls into what we talked about earlier with the power dynamics.
And I feel like it offends me.
Yeah.
To me, it offends me if all you think that to get with me is you need money. Like, no, like, where's your substance?
Yeah, I can't believe, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
I can't believe, like, how much I've seen guys, like, brag about their position at work to impress me, or, like, brag about something they have or a place they want to take me. It's,
to me, that's a little cringy.
It's definitely cringy. Like, oh my God, just bring back the men who can attract a woman with, like, their charm and charisma, not flaunting their wallet.
But I feel like that also goes, that goes hand in hand with women constantly thinking that they only can get money from men. And it goes back to women thinking that they need to be objectified all the time.
Yes, like, dude. Oh my God. Maybe this is a symptom of the glorification of sex work. Again,
It definitely is. Oh my God, I hate that word. I hate that word. Because I'm just like, I love men that are simps. I love men that are like...
Okay, maybe we have a different idea. Because for me, like, how I envision simp is a guy who, you know, lacks these... how can I say this without being offensive? He's just really, like, willing to, like, throw their money at a girl for her attention. I think that's really sad.
I think so, too. I think that, like, if a man told me, like, oh, like, it looks both on both ends. Like,
I think what you're referring to with simp, what people call simp, is like the guy who actually treats the girl good. Yeah, that's what you're getting at.
Yeah. But I feel like the OnlyFans culture, like, it makes both parties look bad. Because if I'm with a guy that's like, oh, like, I'm like, I go through his, like, I don't know, not that I go through like their stuff, but like, let's say that I see like a bank statement and it's like, oh, OnlyFans. To me, that's unattractive because it's like, why do you need to pay for this? Like, are you not comfortable with yourself to be able to actually go up to women that you constantly have to be on the internet to see them? And even if it's the why, you know?
Dude, like, I love that you bring that up because it reminds me. How do you feel about, like, seeing a guy, you know, like, liking an OnlyFans advertisement on Instagram? Have you ever experienced that?
Yes.
I grew up with a guy who tries to get at me, if you will. And for me, it is the ultimate turnoff. He will immediately be considered
a no.
A big fat no. And I think some guys, again, do it with good intention because they think they're contributing to empowering women, breaking the stigma around sexuality. Yes. But it absolutely makes me question their priorities and if they're just fixated on pleasure. I don't want a guy who wants it easy. I hate how controversial that feels to say.
No, but it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And I feel like I was apologetic at first using that word too, but it really shouldn't. Like, it's the truth of the matter. When things are, is the truth, it is the truth. When,
yeah.
If it's easy, it's easy. Like, they're
anything easy probably isn't worth having or whatever they say.
It isn't.
I mean, it's pretty harsh, but I mean, even, dude, when I saw my most harsh, I'm talking to my younger self. Like, I'm not even trying to attack anyone because these were my views. Oh my God. Like, I could tell you so many stories and so many dumb belief systems I had. And it just really, I don't even have a bad upbringing. I have a great upbringing. My parents are amazing, but it shows the degree to which some of this stuff infiltrates your mind. Have you ever had the experience where you really liked a masculine guy and you felt kind of guilty for it?
To be honest, so I've never really liked someone that's like overly masculine. Like, I don't know, like, but like, but tell me, like, how was your experience?
Okay, I really want to tell a hilarious story. This is potentially the most embarrassing thing I'll ever say online, but let's just go all in, man. I went into my first job, a traditional, super extreme liberal feminist, if you will, you know, completely indoctrinated by social media. I didn't have a bad upbringing, whatever. And I had this coworker that we're going to pretend his name is Tom. Okay. And I hated Tom from the very first day that I worked with Tom. I thought he was the epitome of toxic masculinity. You know, he was really direct, straightforward, a tough guy.
But I think that's kind of hot, though.
I'm getting there. I hated him. And we had extremely different views on social issues. We would argue all the time. He would say things, and I would think to myself, I can't believe I'm working with a real misogynist. Oh my God. You know, because he would say he wouldn't date a stripper or he doesn't like when girls act trashy. I was like the freaking hero for sex workers. I would constantly argue with him. So whatever. A little bit of time passed and I started noticing qualities in Tom that I liked. Like, one thing about him is he was really big and strong, but he wasn't a threatening person. He was really friendly. He was really good at starting conversation. And even with all like the weird regular customers we had, he would be like, oh, hey, so-and-so, how's this and this? He was friendly with everyone. And I thought that was pretty beautiful. And whenever someone was up to something sketchy, he was two steps ahead of everybody. He was really observant. He was a great logical thinker. And he had a way of making people feel safe in his presence. And, you know, he was a person I would go to for problems and stuff like that. So eventually, I got a little crush on Tom. And I would always check the schedule to see if we were going to work together. But I would really cry to my friends because I thought because of the way he was that he was a toxic masculine or a misogynist. And the fights we would get into, it was just so bad. And so one day, I found out Tom did something I really didn't want Tom to do. So because of my little feminist bubble that I lived in, I thought the best approach to this problem would be to call him and scream at him and tell him what an asshole he is. And I did. Dude, I was screaming at the top of my lungs. I've never cursed at anyone so much in my whole entire life. And the whole time, he was calm. And
I do want to say that these are all things that you're mentioning, that they're all good masculinity. So if exactly, you're listening,
that's where I'm getting to. Yeah. So I call him and I scream at him and he's telling me, Kenya, look at how you're behaving. You're being really irrational. And I was so furious at the fact that he was calm that it was only fueling me even more because I wanted to provoke emotion from him so bad. And I thought the fact that he wasn't being emotional was a symptom of his toxic masculinity. And, you know, it just, oh my God, guys don't know how to talk about their problems. They don't know how to be emotional, da, 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 da. But long story short, a lot of time passed and I left that situation still thinking he was the bad guy. But now that I'm a little bit older and I reflect and I hear my friends talk about fights with their boyfriends will say, oh, you fucking bitch, da, 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 da. They'll block them. They'll argue back with them. And, you know, now with a little bit more age and insight, I realized that was positive masculinity, and he was an amazing human being. And if he would have gotten emotional back with me, I would have been devastated. I wouldn't have been able to handle it. Even with things that I was saying, he was telling me, okay, Kenya, like, I wish the best for you. Like, I understand how you feel. And that was making me mad at the time. I think that's so twisted.
And now you look back and you're like, okay, like, this is actually what I would like from a male figure.
Exactly.
And I think that is true. Like, men, like, the stereotypes of what men should be things like calm and collected.
Right.
They should be strong, but not overbearing. They should, you know, like, there's a perfect balance for these things. And a lot of men think that because a lot of men have the wrong thought of what masculinity should be, and they get taught, oh no, you can't cry, oh no, you can't be in touch with your emotional side, or oh no, like, you need to, when there are women around, you need to assert your dominance. Like no, those are things that I feel like they're it's toxic masculinity. And a lot of it, like we were reading in the research paper from the college professor, was 70% of the prison population serving long-term sentences are males with fatherless homes.
Right. So
the absence of masculinity is actually putting men in danger. It's actually putting men in worse situations.
Rather than people think that this is the representation of what masculinity is, when it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, it's having the perfect balance of both. And yeah, it really is. You can be masculine and you can be feminine. Like, you can empower both energies and find what works best for you. It doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. I feel like I've really come in touch with my feminine side as I've gotten older. And I'm still in touch with my masculine side. So when I need to be this strong, logical, assertive person, I am. And I feel like I've bettered it because I have my emotional side too. So now I'm this person that looks at things logically and emotionally as well, rather than just thinking this way or this way.
Yeah.
So now I can put them both on a scale, and I'm like, okay, am I being overly emotional or am I being overly logical? Because sometimes I feel like a lot of my problem is with my own friends, is I try to solve their problems rather than listen to them and understand where they're coming from. Like, my friends could be like, oh, but, you know, he did this to me and he cheated on me. And I'm more like, okay, well, it's time to move. It's time to move on. You know, like, I'm more of a logical rather than, oh, I understand, you know, like, I understand that you're hurt. And it's finding the perfect balance. Like, both is good. And understanding that over toxic masculinity is constantly feeling the need to say that you're the strongest, or constantly, like, it goes back to you need validation from others in order to love yourself, in order to feel this way. And I feel like a lot of masculinity comes from home. Like, toxic masculinity comes from home. And in being raised in a Hispanic household, I kind of was shown how males have different standards than women. I was always taught to excel in school. Mm-hmm. I was always taught to excel in my schoolwork. My schoolwork, what basically my activities in school. And then my brother was kind of more brought up like, it's okay if you don't do that well in school, but you better get ready for when you need to work.
I can agree. Yeah, in Hispanic households, it's kind of insane.
Like, the lack of, not that I lacked work ethic, because my mother's very hardworking, but I'm more like with this podcast, I'm more into this. Like, I'm more into reading. I'm more into teaching myself things and it actually goes back to one of the statistics that we saw on the paper, that it was 71% of all dropouts come from fatherless homes. So why is that? Why do we think that females need to stick to being the smart person, but not having work ethic? And why do we think that males don't need to be book smart and just solely be providers? You know, these are toxic categorizations that aren't benefiting anyone.
Right. Absolutely. I would love to go deeper with all of these statistics and, you know, get to the root of all this stuff and, you know, why we feel that way and why this happens. I think it's pretty fascinating stuff.
And I feel like we did go in depth on like the positive masculinity and the
negative
masculinity. I feel like we differentiated them good for you guys to understand. I did point out there's good and there's bad. And in regards to the OnlyFans, we kind of do want to go deeper into that, but maybe in a different podcast.
Right. Yeah, these are meaty topics. It's kind of hard to really go in depth with everything in one episode.
And I feel like we did target, though. I do want to say this one last thing. One of the other statistics that I saw in the paper was that 80% of rapists with anger issues come from fatherless homes. So it just goes to fortify the thought that the lack of masculinity creates toxic masculinity.
Yeah. I remember he concludes the paper by saying how we can heal this problem. I don't remember everything he listed, but one thing that resonated with me was we need to empower guys. So it falls back into this idea, hey, maybe complaining that men are shit all the time is actually kind of detrimental to our society. And I feel as a woman that for me, I can go on social media and there's all kinds of empowerment and positive rhetoric for women and stuff like that. I would like to see more of that for men.
Yeah,
I think we should empower our men, uplift them. I'm a huge believer in the
power
of positive reinforcement. And raise them to be good father figures and have these values. So yeah, I may not agree with rhetoric like, oh, don't cry because crying's for girls. But I do think we could go about it a better way and still instill these values of being strong, you know?
I feel like a lot of single parent households, they try to enforce both perspectives and it kind of just, in a way they clash and they make the child like worrisome. They make him like confused because it's just like, I was raised in a household with just my mother, but my mother's telling me that I shouldn't cry, but I see her crying all the time. Like it's confusing.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something that like needs to, you know, like we need to be able to uplift men to the point where they're comfortable enough with their selves and in their skins to the point where they don't have to feel defensive all the time. Because I think that like being insecure and then being raised to be defensive are like this toxic mixture that just should not be together. Because this person that's going to constantly be insecure and defensive isn't going to find a way to say, okay, like, no, I'm confident in myself. I think maybe you're just degrading me rather than just, oh no, fuck you. I know who I am, you know? And I think that's toxic. I think that men can say like, no, I am comfortable in my skin and what you're saying is wrong. And maybe you just need to go about your own way. You know, rather than continuously trying to argue and prove themselves. And if men had that uplifting and if men have that security, they wouldn't constantly think that they need to prove themselves and they need to be this big masculine person all the time, because that's the constantly wanting to be, you know, like strong and like all these things that they think masculinity is just reinforcing the toxic masculinity. One more thing that I didn't mention when we were talking about the video of the young girl and the mother that was degrading her is people forget that the internet is for everyone.
Yeah.
The internet
100%.
Is for everyone.
Oh my God. It reminds me, I saw this post on the psychology page and it's similar to that video. It was like a drawing of a mom taking a picture of her naked body and the kid like walking in on her and being like, oh my God, what are you doing? And the caption said something similar to what you just said. Just be mindful of what you post online. The internet's for everyone. And you wouldn't believe the comment section. People were saying, you need to mind your business. You don't tell a woman what to do with her body. And it's getting to the point where people feel like they can't say facts. They can't speak on science. You know, kids we know are malleable and they mirror what they see their parents doing. So if we're not mindful to that, we're going to put our kids in some very unsafe positions, like the woman in that video with her daughter, catching her daughter selling photos, making herself susceptible to God knows what, you know, getting the attention of pedophiles, stuff of that nature.
I feel like it's a traumatic experience for the daughter knowing that this video is out and it's viral. It's not, like multiple kids are going to see this her age, and they're going to like, when things open back up and they go back to school, they're going to constantly be like, oh, like you were the girl that was selling nudes. And it's something that she might not ever get over because it's just so public. It's just so public. And like you were saying, the mom is also victimized, because how do you know what to do in this situation? Like, a lot of parents don't, you know, a lot of parents have to work, and their sole role as a parent is to simply feed their kid. So now you have someone that's trying to and like tell their kid, no, you're doing something wrong, but they don't know how.
Yeah.
I think that, in my opinion, if that was my kid, I would have pulled him to the side and be like, hey, like, what's causing you to do this? Like,
right, getting to the root of it.
Why do you need money at such a young age? Am I not providing? Like, how can we fix this? Rather than going on the internet and simply objectifying her and telling her that, you know, like, basically that comment of your ass isn't even big. It's just more kind of like, oh, maybe if your butt was bigger, you'd get more money. Like, it's stupid. You get me?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. It's
a contradiction. And she's not going to learn anything from that. She's simply going to take, you know, like, oh, my mom said that I didn't have enough ass. Let me prove to her that I can still make money with the money I have.
And creating a sneakier child, you know, because again, you're not actually nipping the problem at the butt. You're just scaring her out of doing it again.
And you have the child is going to constantly seek the validation that the mom didn't give her, the security, the self-awareness, the self-esteem that she should have.
And we got these like continuous cycles and patterns, just a never ending.
And this goes out, you know, like if it ever reaches somebody, you know, like the mom from the video, I understand where you are coming from. I understand the anger and I understand the frustration, but publicly violating your child just gives the opening for everyone else to publicly violate her. Like you just have a standard to how your child is going to be treated. And I get a lot of parents are like, no, only I can speak to my child that way, but you don't really know what goes on with your child when you're not around.
Mm-hmm. And kids are cruel, man.
And kids are mean. Kids are freaking mean. And it's one of those things where it's just like, a lot of the times kids won't tell, you know, like, I'm getting bullied for this, because they'd rather hide it, because then they're going to go get in trouble at home. Mm-hmm. So now you have this child that after this happens, she may continuing selling these pics because she doesn't understand why it's wrong. The only thing that she got out was, oh, you have no ass. That's the only thing that I'm saying. And it's just like, okay, when the child does turn 18 and she can do this legally, she's going to, because she doesn't understand why it was wrong in the first, but she kind of just understands that she wasn't good enough at the time.
Exactly. As a society, we just need to do better all around, as parents, women, as men.
But a lot of kids are on the internet. So it's not the fact that you are, it's not wrong to have an OnlyFans if it's one in every five women, you know what I mean? Where you have other women being scientists, doctors, you know, being these things that we need, like nurses, and we need CEOs and inventors and creators and engineers, and we need all these things. So it's okay if you have that one in five that's a sexual worker, but then if you have five out of five, that's all the kids see, and that's all they see when they go online. And a lot of the women that do have big platforms online, they have OnlyFans. Whether they got the platform because of OnlyFans or they created their OnlyFans because of the platform they had.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of young girls who want to become Insta famous or Twitter famous, or they want to go viral, and they see these specific things going viral, so then they associate the going viral
exactly by
the sexual being, when it
exactly
not be like that. And I feel like we see a lot of that, and it's just, to me, it's a little sad, because you have these little challenges that they're not meant to be harmful, but if like a 6-year-old is on the floor twerking, like, it just doesn't look right to me.
Exactly. It shouldn't.
The age, it all goes to the age. Not that twerking is a dance, but it's who the dance attracts. You get me? Mm-hmm. Because not everyone is sane. It goes back to you, pedophiles. Pedophiles are going to be attracted to those kind of things. So you're putting your kid more in danger. So instead of saying no and being authoritarian, you can be like, no, but this is why. No one likes to just hear no. I need to hear a reason why, or if not, I'm going to find out why.
Yeah, authority does need to be justified for it to be respected, or if they're not going to respect you, they're just going to do it behind your back.
Exactly. Yeah. And dude, even me with my little cousins, I try to limit what they post, but kind of in a way tell them like, hey, maybe because you're underage, you shouldn't post this really provocative picture. Not because there's anything wrong with it. You know, you're in your bathing suit. It's just more the people that it attracts. Mm-hmm. Like who it is you're attracting. Like you don't want to have like a whole, like you don't want to have this big Twitter following if it's just a bunch of pedophiles.
And again, you dictate what you attract. Again, something we talked about earlier. So it is important to be mindful of how you carry yourself and making sure it's aligning with what you want for yourself. You're not in alignment if you're, you know, behaving a certain way, but you want something else. You want to be with a good guy, but you're at the club every night. You want to attract good men, but you're posting these photos that are attracting...
I don't want to say that it's not that there's anything wrong with being at the club every night.
Right.
Like, you don't
you're not going to exactly find the best of our society there. Yeah. So don't go with that expectation.
Exactly. So it's the expectation. Do not go with the expectation that you're going to find this ideology of a man there.
Yeah.
It's not, when people go out, they go out to have fun. They go out to, you know, like they're not there to really represent who they are. Like you just meet this little percentage of the person that's having fun, that's drinking.
People who are coping with some real problems. Man, like the one and only time I ever went to a club, I ended up talking to this guy who just got this, like, he broke up with this girl he was engaged with because she cheated on him. I do think it can be a stressful for the worst. Not saying every person at the club is the worst, but again, it's just not the right place to look for the right guy. You do have more control than you think of the people around you.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that. I do wanted to go back to, I like the club when I am surrounded by females, like women.
Yeah.
I like being around women and I like dancing. But you're right. Like when you get into like why men are there, they're simply there to be around women. And I feel like,
I feel like
women might go with a different intention, not necessarily always trying to be around men, but kind of just hang out and get, like, you know, drink with your friends, have fun. And then, but you have this constantly, like, men pestering over you. And I think it's teaching men how to not do that, how to let women, you know, like, kind of be themselves and not constantly be surrounded over the
The first thing we had talked about when you had asked, you know, how can we embrace masculinity without overshadowing femininity when it's the complete opposite? If we were able to embrace that, femininity could flourish. You know, girls could have fun in these environments without, you know, fearing like a gross guy trying to get at them or something like that.
Sorry,
you know,
to talk about. And
yes, I love this conversation.
And I'm so glad that we got to share it with you guys. I am trying to post this as soon as possible. There's a couple things I need to edit out, but other than that, I think we're doing a really good job. And if there are questions that you guys have for us, I think we should have I might post it on YouTube because the podcast place that I am posting it through, they don't do videos. So I'm trying to figure out a way to where we can do
that both. That would be so fun.
Yeah. And so I definitely want people, if you have questions for us, I want you to ask. If there's things that you maybe did not understand, I definitely want you to ask. Remember, the most important thing with what we opened is always asking why. It's always trying to find the answer to something.
Yeah, look deeper. Don't just go with the mob, you know?
It doesn't benefit you going with the mob.
It
doesn't. You know, you never really get to truly discover yourself.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to speak your truth, because one thing I found too online, you know, being comfortable with contradicting the mob is I'm, you know, being more aligned with people who I actually like, people who I actually agree with. So don't fall into this thing where, you know, you're only being liked for an ideology. It's much more fulfilling to be yourself and attract the people who are meant to be in your life, you know?
Definitely, yes. It's so glad. And I always tell my brother that. I'm always like, hey, like, be yourself so you can attract people that you have things in common with.
Because exactly.
If you're not yourself, you're not going to find things in common.
Exactly.
And you're going to get bored of the friendship. You're going to get bored of the relationship. And it's just going to be tiresome because you're constantly trying to be someone that you're not.
Exactly.
When I wanted to find my chess group, it was literally like, hey, who else plays chess? Because I want to be surrounded by people that have the same common goal as me, the same common hobby. A lot of people, I've tried to teach one of my friends how to play chess and she was like talking the entire time. I'm like, no, this is not how you play chess. Like, no, like you need to think.
Yeah. And,
like you have different friends for different occasions, but as long as you are yourself, you're going to attract people that think like you, that like want to be like I'm solely against the thought of what is that saying that's like birds by it's like oh fuck sorry
birds of a feather flock together.
Yes, birds of a feather flock. Yes, that one. And it's not that I don't agree with that statement, because I'm very versatile. Like I have friends everywhere and I'm just a social butterfly. But I do have certain friends where I'm like, okay, I can hang out with you like every day and like we can talk about the same things and it's enjoyable. But I also have friends that I'm like, okay, we're only going to be friends because I like clubbing with you. You know, it's little things like that. And it's, I think one of the most important parts of any human being is being diverse.
Absolutely.
Versatile. It's just being, you know, like being your uttermost self, no matter the environment that you're in. And it's willing to learn. I feel like something that I've learned as I've gotten older is to say, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, that is so important and so beautiful. And again, like we had talked about earlier, the true catalyst to any kind of growth. It's okay. It's okay to say you don't know something. It's perfectly fine. It's okay to admit to be wrong.
Being wrong is something that, like, it took me a little while to learn because I was always the need to be right. But it being wrong has really just, it's fixed my ego in a way.
Because yeah.
I'm like, the gratification that I feel within myself when I do get it right, I'm like, oh my God, like I want to be wrong all the time so I can just figure out how to, it's like a giant puzzle. Being wrong is a puzzle. Like you're wrong and let me go fix it. And then when you do fix it, it's just so satisfying.
Right.
And I'm glad that I got to have this discussion with you. And even though I didn't release my first podcast on my mental disorder, it wasn't because it's not done. It wasn't anything like that. It's just more, sharing an experience like that with the world and with you guys, it's taking not a little toll on me, but kind of in a way, like it's so personal. And like we were saying about the sex things, like there's certain things that you're willing to share with someone and that you're willing not. And this topic specifically kind of puts me in a vulnerable state where I do discuss my mental illness and I do discuss my time in the hospital. And I am going to release it because it's something that, like Kenya told me, you need to come forward, because a lot of people are like, they live behind this curtain of fear that this isn't normalized. And yes, I am going to come forward. It's just taking me a little time to completely get comfortable. You know, most of my family members didn't even know that I was hospitalized. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so it's just like, damn, like, let me just tell everyone that I'm hospitalized, the people that like are close to me through a podcast. It wasn't the best way to do things, you know? Yeah. So I had to like tell my family, you know, like, hey, like I was hospitalized back in March for a week and I kind of needed to settle it in with them, because growing up in a Hispanic household, being mentally ill is kind of one of those things where it's frowned upon because it's in quotations for crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to be able to completely remove that thought from their brains before I release this and then think that I am just, you know, insane. But I'm definitely, thank you for coming on to Now and Tomorrow. And this is our first podcast together, but I'm sure that there'll be many more, because within yourself to share these thoughts with other people, because I feel like a lot of people, you know, don't have that. And I'm glad that we got to do this experience together. It was definitely a bonding moment. And we hope that you guys like this as much as we do.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. Like you said, it is extremely intimate. It's an intimate experience to like do a project like this with someone. And thank you for making me feel like I can be open with you, because that's definitely rare nowadays. And thank you for giving me a platform to speak my mind and share my truth.